Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. Once again, Michael Shine, host of the popular podcast, Access to Anyone, interviews David Schreiner Khan as we continue with our mini-series, Fire Your Business Coach. If you've been following this mini-series, you may have decided to start your own community of like-minded entrepreneurs. But what's the next step? Listen as David talks about the backbone of every community, structure.
So the structure of how the community works, kind of day-to-day, not only is it important, but if you're looking to join one, when you check one out, looking at the structure will give you some cues as to how effective it's likely to be. Because if it's poorly structured, it's probably not going to work all that well. So some of the things that you want to have in a productive and effective community, particularly in the meeting part. So let's talk about what happens in the meeting. There should be expectations for those who will attend, which means having an agenda, not just at the meeting, but the agenda should be prepared in advance. So if I have a meeting that I'm going to go to next week, I know what's going to be covered. I know what I can expect to get out of the meeting by the time I leave. And I know what kinds of things I might need to think about or to prepare for my own contribution to make the community meeting effective. There should be really clear time frames for each portion of the meeting.
Who prepares that agenda? If everyone is sort of an equal in the meeting, and you know, who's in charge of preparing that agenda?
The leader or the facilitator or community manager, whatever you're calling the person who's responsible for the meeting facilitation, that person should be preparing the agenda. And that, by the way, that person doesn't have to be the same person who leads the meeting.
And how do you incentivize people to take on that leader role? It's one thing if they're hired by a company to facilitate, but there's a lot of extra work involved for this person. So what are some of the benefits for playing that role? And how do we communicate those benefits to that person?
It's a great question, right? So the person who is there are various leadership roles in any community. One, as we mentioned, is creating the agenda. Another one is leading the discussion at the meeting or leading a portion of the discussion. It doesn't have to be one person for the whole meeting. Another one could be timekeeper. So what's the incentive for somebody to take on one of those leadership roles? There are various incentives. One is it might be something that you actually like doing and you're good at, right? So if you're talking about, I mentioned earlier, being in a community is all about giving and receiving. So as part of your giving to the community, if you're really good at leading a discussion among a group of people, then that might be your method of giving, and people will welcome it. Frankly, it gives you some exposure. People see your skill set. So we talked about, you know, in a mastermind group, there's this opportunity for collaboration. And a business community is like goes beyond that and has other characteristics as well. But it also has the characteristic of potential collaboration. And when you have a group of people in a room together that are working on a particular problem, whether it's doing something tactical like leading a meeting or keeping time or throwing out ideas to help solve a problem, the other people in the room see and hear what's going on, and it gives them cues as to when and where you might be a good potential partner on a business activity. So taking on one of those roles kind of opens yourself up to the a potential opportunity because people see how you behave in the group setting.
Okay, so keep going in regards to how you structure this community.
Right, so having the agenda is important, and making sure whoever's leading the meeting, making sure you stick to the agenda and stick to the time frame. If the dynamics of what goes on during the meeting are sufficiently complex that it's hard to manage the agenda, manage the discussion, listen to what's going on, and keep time, it may be beneficial to have somebody have the role of just timekeeper. Right, and that person could, you know, if you set out 15 minutes for a portion of the meeting, that person can notify you when like the last 2 minutes are approaching, so you know to wrap things up. In addition to some of the leadership roles that I already mentioned, like timekeeping and facilitating discussion, could be another leadership role is making announcements. You know, and that person could also be responsible for collecting announcements in between meetings and organizing them so that when the announcements are made of what's coming up, they're really clear, concise, and people will pay attention. I talked about earlier about the importance of how you acquire new members and how you acclimate new members into the group. So welcoming visitors is really important. It's another leadership role. And orienting new members is a role. And they could be separate. They're not necessarily have to be the same person. But these are all different kinds of leadership roles. Some groups have a strong social element, right? If they want people to be able to, in addition to getting together in their formal structured meeting for business purposes, they may want to get together periodically in a social setting, especially with family members, so that people get to know one another's family members and more about their personal lives, because that also adds to the trust and adds to the relationship. So you could have somebody who's responsible for kind of organizing the social component for a group. But you know, in general, what's really important is having strong, proactive, caring leadership that is really focused on being active and building and supporting the community every single day. You know, what I talked about now is what happens during the actual meeting itself. There are other aspects that need to happen outside of that and in between meetings. But in the meeting itself, it should be structured. It should be really clear what to expect and when to expect it. And it's really important to make sure that everybody gets equal airtime. So that's one of the one of the aspects of a good discussion leader is making sure everybody gets equal airtime. Because we know in any group, there are people who will always start talking. If you have you know, it's one of the cultural norms, you have a rule that you need to be recognized before you can speak. That rule can exist whether you're three people in a group or hundreds of people in a group or even thousands. You know there are going to be some people that will start talking anyway. And somebody needs to find, the person who's facilitating the discussion needs to be able to find a way to control the ones who talk too much and make sure that the ones who don't talk enough get airtime, because their ideas are valuable too. And we want to hear their ideas. So you have to have a way to kind of pull that out. You know, one of the things you could even do in a structured meeting, if you have, as an example, people who are very shy and reluctant to speak in front of a group, you can do things where you break the group up periodically into very small groups, like of pairs or triads, and do a little exercise where there's a structure to report ideas that are generated in the small group back to the larger group. That helps those other people get their ideas heard. You can do things like have people write things down on paper and pass them up to the facilitator, and the facilitator can read them. There are a lot of ways to get a balance of viewpoints and balance of airtime in a group.
Anything else in regards to structure? You know, how do you make it the most effective, not just for having a great meeting, but for structuring a meeting that will help? You know, we've made a lot of big claims about the role of community, that it's going to replace the rugged individualist, that it's the single mechanism, the single most important mechanism for a professional to sort of excel. So what can you do in this meeting so that it goes beyond just being a discussion and a lead generator to really being that engine? Is there anything in the structure itself that allows for this?
Yes, there's definitely something in the structure that not only will allow for the benefit of the many minds in the room to help each individual create greater success and accelerate their progress, but there are things that you can do in the structure to kind of foster that. So in both the meeting preparation and what happens during the meeting, in terms of your communication with the people in the room, if you're the leader, the purpose of the meeting should be clear. We should all know, anyone who's in the room should know what kind of outcomes are expected. And we should also know who the stakeholders are with regard to any issue in advance, because that will help facilitate the discussion. We should know what the process is for including the stakeholders in the discussion and what their roles are in the decision making. It's important to, if there are, again, if you're, you know, as an example, let's say because of the collaborative nature of what happens in the group, there is a project that involves more than one member. So let's say two or three members might be working either directly on a project or indirectly on a project. If there are issues that may come up that may impact those stakeholders that may have any kind of sensitivity, then it's best to try to communicate with the stakeholders in advance. You know, so let's say as an example, you have two people who both, and I used the real estate example before, but let's say you have two people in the room who both are in the real estate sector, and they decide that they are going to work jointly on a particular project. Maybe they've decided they're going to flip a house together, right? So they invest together. Now, let's say there are two other people who have some relationship with the real estate sector, and they have some skill set in the real estate sector, and those other members have no idea that two members have decided to go into this deal together, and the other three may be miffed that they weren't included. So you might, and if you're as the facilitator, you may sense that, then it's probably important to speak to the people where you think they may be put off by what's going to happen. Speak to them before the meeting takes place and explain kind of what happens, ask them any questions, and allay any fears they may have about what's going on. So you don't have either something blow up during the course of the meeting, or that you have kind of side conversations because people are kind of bent out of shape. You know, sometimes these things happen with regard to the purpose of the meeting. If the group is deciding that the purpose of the meeting might need to shift from one that's primarily business development in nature to one that's more involved in personal development, or one that's involved in specifically just customer service. You don't want people who don't have anything to do with those areas for the most part in their business lives to get upset that there's going to be a fair amount of time spent on something that they think they don't care about. So communication between meetings is really important, particularly when there are sensitive issues. And we talked about, you know, having somebody responsible for preparing the agenda, but you don't prepare that agenda in a vacuum. You've got to know kind of what's going on and seek input from people who may have relevant input for what's going to go into the agenda. And lastly, make sure that you understand the opinions of any stakeholders in the room on any issues that get discussed during the meeting. So when you're preparing the structure, I talked about how important it is to have a clear sense of how much time each portion of the meeting is going to take. One of the things that you should keep in mind is it's good to have a little buffer and allow some extra time. So either you may want to have a portion of the agenda where you are kind of overestimating how long something's going to take so that you can recapture that time and use it for another portion of the meeting if needed, or you may just build in some extra time and not schedule it so that you know, people generally don't mind if a meeting ends early, but they will mind if a meeting ends late. If they have other commitments, they are going to get up and leave, and that's going to be very disruptive. make sure that if you are responsible for preparing and structuring the meeting, make sure that any information that any individuals need in order to perform any kind of action or contribute to any discussion during the meeting, make sure they have that information in advance. You don't want people to be surprised. You want them to be prepared. And also you want them to feel like you are caring about them and you're valuing their input. So if you are planning to have a discussion that might take some thought, don't spring it on people at the last minute. Give them the benefit of the benefit and the respect of sharing the information with sufficient lead time so they can think about the issues. And lastly, I talked a lot about this giving first culture, but communities work well when there's a culture that it is important to give first and be prepared to give even with no expectation of receiving anything in return, particularly receiving anything in return from the same person. Because often when you receive something in return, it doesn't come back from the same person because they don't have what you need. Somebody else in the room will have what you need. So this culture of giving first is very important.
And people often say that. They say you should give first, and I understand that it's a nice thing to do, and some people say karma, but are there other mechanisms going on? Like, why does, especially in a community structure, I mean, forget about it as a general rule, but why is giving without expectation to get back from the same person, not why is it nice, but why does it work in a community structure?
So it works because the definition of community is that everyone benefits because of individual efforts that are part of a group. And in order for everyone to benefit, somebody has to give first, right? If no one gives and everybody walks into a room expecting to receive, nothing's going to happen. Somebody has, right? The basic law of reciprocity is, in order for somebody to receive something, somebody else has to give something. Even if you look at a business transaction where somebody's paying something, right? I'm delivering a service and you're paying me for the service. There's reciprocity in that.
Yeah, but sure. But you're saying that you're not getting back from the person you gave to. I mean, in a business relationship, you give money and you get back something else. Why in the, beyond the fact that it sounds theoretically great, what is the mechanism that is making this giving without getting back from the same person work to significantly build businesses in a community setting?
It works because in addition to the reciprocity that happens when you have a formal transaction where there's a structure for the reciprocity, right? You know, if you walk into a store and you want a quart of milk, if you don't pay for that quart of milk, you're like you're subject to arrest, right? You know, that's a basic structure that we're used to, and we all accept that's part of our culture. The culture of a group is if there is a culture of giving and receiving. Again, this goes back to the cultural aspect of it. If that is one of the basic norms of behavior, then there is an expectation that I am going to benefit in some way by being a member of the group, so I will receive something. And there also is the expectation that as part of my obligation of being a member, I need to be giving something to the group, right? And if you're giving to a group, it may benefit one or more individuals, or it may benefit everybody in the group. If you're receiving something from a group, you may be receiving it from one individual or more than one individual, or you may be receiving it from everybody. So in summary, what successful community meetings have in common are the following. They have ground rules and structure, which I talked about. There's an agenda for each meeting. The group spends some time setting goals. Doesn't have to be at each meeting. But they're sometimes setting goals, so we know what the goals are for the meeting. There is a definition of success for the people who are members. So I can anticipate what kind of increased success I will gain by being a member of this group. There is a way that we can measure success or measure an increased rate of success, so I know what the metrics are. And there is some structure for reporting on the metrics. and a process for reporting on them. So we know what went well, what didn't go well, where there were roadblocks. The meetings need to have some time spent planning so that we can plan what's going to happen the next time we're together. And then lastly, the behavior elements that are really important are there need to be, and this is structured into the meeting, it's behavior, but it's structured in. So there has to be time to listen, time to speak, time to praise, and time to help. Then in between the meetings, there are activities that are really critical to the long-term success of the community. One is, and I've talked about this a lot, one is additional communication as needed. Either communication that involves the whole group, because there are certain things like announcements you want everybody in the group to know. And then there's communication that involves pairs or subgroups. So if I'm just have something that's specific to help one or two members of the group, I'm not going to communicate that to everybody, but I will communicate it in between the meetings. I shouldn't wait until the meeting happens to communicate something that I know will benefit somebody today. Also, if there are sensitive issues, you want to make sure that communication happens in between the meetings, not in front of everybody. I talked about how accountability is important as part of the structure of the meeting, but additional accountability might be needed for certain individuals in between. And this is where the facilitator can really create breakthrough success for the group. So if the facilitator notices that there's one person that's really not holding himself or herself accountable, needs some extra hand-holding and maybe holding the feet to the fire at the same time, the facilitator can take a few minutes in between meetings and just check in and say, how are you doing on this? What extra help do you need? You know, maybe somebody else in the group can help you with this, or maybe I can help you with this. Making sure there's an opportunity for feedback from the group to the leadership for continuous improvement. Don't expect that it's going to happen automatically. It's just like customer service and customer feedback. You want to create an opportunity, not only an opportunity, but create a structure so that the members of the group will keep feeding suggestions back to make the group even better. Make sure that there is a plan to act on that feedback. Don't just accept it and do nothing. You've got to plan to, you've got to react to it. You've got to communicate that you've heard what the feedback is, and then you have to communicate what's going to happen and make sure that it does happen. If you say, I'm going to make a change in how I run the next meeting, you better make the change. And then lastly, in order for continuous improvement of the people who are involved, you want to work on both the leaders and the members to foster the following. You want continued development. So you want to make sure that there is continuous leadership development. Leaders will probably do best if they serve for a certain period of time in a role, and then they get cycled off and somebody else replaces them. So there should be some structure for that. You want to make sure there's an opportunity to evaluate how well leaders are doing in any kind of role. So if there's a problem, you can deal with it. And if somebody's doing really well, you can praise them. Make sure that there is a plan for retiring leaders. As I said, leaders are probably best if they cycle off. So you want to give other people an opportunity to take on leadership roles. So have a structure for cycling people off. And the same thing holds true for members. You've got to have a plan for how you're going to acquire new members, how you're going to evaluate members once they're on board and serving as members for a while. You want to make sure that there's a plan to retire members that where the fit isn't so good, or if members are not meeting the cultural norms of the group, there's got to be a way to deal with that. And there's obviously got to be a way to orient new members as they come on board. And I talked before about social activities that might not be part of the formal business community structure. And that's important. So as I said, there are elements that need to happen in between meetings. And in my opinion, what happens between the meetings is as important as what happens during the meetings. And that's the role of the facilitator, to make sure that those things happen, because those private interactions between members is really what helps build trust and build strong relationships for the long term. Even if you're seeing people once a week in a group, there's nothing like having a periodic coffee or having a phone call or having a some kind of offline interaction. Those things help a lot. And if you want community members to support one another, then there should be a culture of making sure that they ask one another how they can be helpful. You can structure this into the formal meetings, and you can also make sure that this is part of the activity that happens between meetings. You could have, as an example, a part of your accountability process that happens during the meetings is name one thing that you did to help somebody else in the group since the last meeting. And that will foster a sense of helpfulness and wanting to communicate in between meetings. So, as I said, what happens in between is as important as what happens during the formal meetings itself. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter to continue the discussion. Please share this episode with your colleagues and friends, and it would help a great deal if you'd leave a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. Come back and listen to our next episode as we explore how to structure your community so that it will support your success and the success of everyone who is a member of the community. My guest, corporate psychologist Dave Poppel, shares some great tips that will help you understand the environmental factors that are key to the success of a community. It's an episode you won't want to miss. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.